You're listening to another edition of In and Out of Sports in the Coach's Corner with Coach Butch McAdams. In and Out of Sports is sponsored in part by Horton's Funeral Service, Dr. Edward T. Buford, and the Athletic Republic Capital Region, and is powered by the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. Well, folks, I am so excited. I have one of my heroes aboard. This guy was simply one of the greatest winners in all of sport. Second most NBA rings, 10. A part of 8 consecutive championships. The 8th pick overall in the 1957 NBA draft, as I stated. Just a great one. He is Sam Jones. Hey, Sam, such an honor to speak with you on In and Out of Sports in the Coach's Corner. How are you?
Good morning. I feel fine, Butch. I'm staying my, I even say 6 feet away, 6 feet away or 6 feet under.
Well, no, definitely not 6 feet under. Sam, you were.
I'm feeling great, Butch. It's just a pleasure to be on the air with you.
And look, man, you have so many friends and admirers in the Washington metropolitan area and across the country, but especially in the D.C. area where you resided for a number of years. You were a very well-respected coach. You put on some of the most awesome basketball clinics that I witnessed, and they tell me that you had a pretty fair golf game. So I don't know anything about that part, but they tell me you're pretty good at golf.
Well, I'm better at basketball than I am at golf, but I'll tell you this. You're still playing here in Florida, Butch, and, mm-hmm. and I'm having a great time because it's one cart per person, and we keep our spacing. And you know, I'm really having a good time because I think this virus is going to change a lot on the way we live from now on.
Yeah, absolutely. No question about it. Sam, you were a part of something that I don't think we'll ever see again. Now, most records aren't sacred. Records are made to be broken, but there's certain records that I think are untouchable. And 8 consecutive championships in the NBA, we won't ever see that again. How was that possible?
I think, Butch, it was Coach Red Auerbach who lived in Washington all of his life and putting together a team that could play the way he wanted basketball to be played. And he brought in people that had come from winning situations. And he found a guy through a coach from George Washington, the coach had played against him, who coached Red Auerbach and Bill Russell. Red Auerbach never saw Bill Russell play a game in college.
Wow.
And he called, this is true. But, Butch, there's something else.
Okay.
The two winningest basketball players in the NBA is Bill Russell and Sam Jones.
That's
and
right.
And he never saw me play a game. And he called people and asked who would be best situated for that position. And someone I heard told him Sam Jones.
Wow.
And,
and
they all said, but this is interesting that you bring the subject up.
Sure.
I remember, and I don't know if this is true or not, that in 1957, when I graduated from North Carolina Central, it was North Carolina College then.
Yes.
North Carolina Central University now. Just before graduation, I heard he called Bones McKinney, who was coaching at Wake Forest,
mm-hmm.
and asked who was the best player in North Carolina, in the state. And Bones McKinney said, well, what are you looking for? He says, I'm looking for a guard. And Bones McKinney said, well, the best state player in the state of North Carolina is Sam Jones at North Carolina College. Now, if you go back to 1957, Coach Frank McGuire and the UNC, the University of North Carolina, beat Wilt Chamberlain out in Kansas in triple overtime for the NCAA championship. And Lenny Rosenbluth, who was drafted ahead of me by Philadelphia, was an All-American and probably the MVP of that tournament. And then I heard that Red put down the phone. And then 2 weeks later, he called back Bones McKinney and said, listen, you got players at North Carolina State. You got Duke University, which was only Duke University was only a half an hour from my campus. University of North Carolina was 25 miles from our campus. North Carolina State was 59 miles. But you got to remember, Butch, black people could not attend those universities.
Absolutely. But if you look at that, excuse me, Sam, if you look at that, back then, on one hand, it was discrimination and segregation, but it made the North Carolina colleges and the Winston-Salems and the Florida A&Ms on and on much stronger. If Sam Jones were playing today at the high school level, a senior, chances are you would be at NC State or UNC or Duke versus North Carolina College, correct?
Neither one. I'd be in the NBA.
I like that.
No, hey, I'm going to tell you right now. Don't. Let me tell you right now.
No. Hey, Coach.
I'd go back and
get
my
degree. You would be in the NBA.
Hey, Butch, I'd go back and get my degree. You understand?
That's right. You go back to get your degree.
Hey, I want you to understand that, yes, when you start off making $5 or $6 million a year, why would you go to college? Because of the fact you do that so you can make more money.
Absolutely.
If you did not make the NBA.
Absolutely. I tell you, folks, we have in the coach's corner Sam Jones, simply one of the best. And Sam, talking about North Carolina College now, you had the privilege to play for arguably the greatest NBA coach of all time in Arnold Red Auerbach. And in college, arguably the greatest collegiate coach who doesn't get his just due historically, but the great John McClendon. Talk about Coach Johnny Mack.
Oh, Coach Johnny Mack. I got to give my mama credit on this. Coach Johnny Mack's backyard and my mom's backyard had the same fence dividing the houses. And my mother used to say to Coach Mack, if you want a good basketball player, you better recruit my son. And I was only one block away from North Carolina College.
Wow.
And then Coach Mack recruited me. And but you love this, the way he recruited me, he came. I was at Laurinburg Institute.
Yes.
And he came down to Laurinburg Institute after I had graduated, and he said, listen, you're going back with me to North Carolina College. And right then, Butch, I don't even think I had a suit. he said, get your clothes. Or, you know, we wore khaki pants and white bucks. That was a big thing for us, white bucks. And I got my clothes, and in the summertime, he took kids up to college so they could play with his team in the summertime. And he got most of his guys jobs at the post office and other jobs that they could be in the afternoon. We would practice. And that's the way he gave out his scholarships.
Wow.
So I was up there. I worked in the dining hall, which was a nice job because I could eat all the food I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And we would practice every evening except Saturdays and Sundays. And I would practice against his varsity team. And that's the way he gave out his scholarship. But you got a 4-year scholarship. And you go back to the Four Corners.
Yes, yes.
He actually invented the Four Corners, which was given to Dean Smith, of course.
That's right.
But Dean Smith wasn't even coaching in 1951. He didn't get to North Carolina. He didn't get to the University of North Carolina until the late 50s.
That's right.
Because Frank McGuire was there.
That's right.
So,
absolutely.
And you talk about the fast break. Oh, we were excellent at the fast break because we had the people that fit right into his system. Mm-hmm. And so when I got there, I was not a starter. But I tell you one thing, I learned a lot because the next 3 years I started.
And not only did you start, you excelled.
Well, we had a good team. I averaged 17 points a ball game, which I also averaged in high school and in the pros. But the most fascinating thing is this man left and went to Hampton and coached at Hampton. And from Hampton, he went to Tennessee State and won three national championships. Three straight national championships in the NAIA.
That's correct.
And they didn't want us to play in. They didn't want blacks in the NAIA. So they went through a lot of stuff trying to get there.
That's right.
They got there, and I stopped going to the Hall of Fame when they put him in. When they put him in the Hall of Fame, he was one of the first black coaches.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't put him in as a coach. They put him in as a contributor, which was all right with me. But wait a minute, he should have gone in as a coach first.
Absolutely.
So Coach John McGlinden is in the Hall of Fame twice. He's in as a contributor, and he's in as a coach.
And also, as we continue our conversation in the Coach's Corner with Sam Jones, Coach John McGlinden was the first African-American hired to coach a professional basketball team. This was the old ABA, and he was hired by none other than George Steinbrenner.
That's right. He had a team in Cleveland.
That's right.
And one of his players was Spencer Hayward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Who a tremendous ball player who is, I think Spencer was the first to come out of high school and go directly to the NBA.
He was. Yes, he was. Yes.
Yeah, yes. Yes. And he came from the Olympics in 1968.
Wow. You are a historian, man. That's why, you know, when you were in D.C., I would just sit around and just listen. Wouldn't say a word, just listen to you and some of the others just talk basketball. And, Sam, you know I got to ask you this question. Our listeners want to know, what was the origin of the bank shot? And talk about the hours of practice you put in to perfect it.
Butch, first of all, I think it came in high school when my coach – made us shoot layups. We had a great high school basketball team. Back in those days, I think had we been rated across the nation, we might have been in the top 10 because it was a boarding school. As I don't know if you know this, Charlie Scott graduated from Laurinburg Institute.
Oh, I'm very
and Charlie
familiar.
Scott.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I sent Jimmy Walker to Laurinburg Institute because I thought he should go there so he could get on into college, get the stuff that he needed to get to college. Now, Charlie Scott was the first to be drafted to be given a scholarship at UNC. And he was tremendous at UNC. And then Jimmy Walker went to Providence and became the number one draft choice in the NBA when he left Providence. Now, Jimmy took my number. He wore number 24 for his lifetime in the NBA to honor me. And I thought that was the greatest thing to ever happen. So if you look back to the bank shot, which you were discussing, we didn't miss layups because we shot the layups off the backboard from both the left and right-hand side. And so I decided, wait a minute, let me start shooting close in, maybe 10 feet out off the backboard. And we call it kiss it off the backboard. And back those days, Butch, we didn't have any glass. We didn't have any glass because you couldn't say glass. You had boards.
That's right.
It was a solid board. So you say kiss it off the backboard, which is a great name. Now you think about it. Boy, I used to shoot that ball up so softly, and it would just go in the basket, and I tried it from both sides. And I was thinking in my mind, this is a layup. You can't miss a layup. You don't miss layups. And I kept shooting and shooting. I would go in, and but my thing was, don't shoot any more than 20 to 25 shots from each side. And think about how many you made and how many you missed. Now, you know, you hate to think about the misses, but you want to think about the makes that you did. And, man, I found out I could kiss this ball off the backboard just as well as I could shoot for the rim. And with angles, it made it so nice to kiss it off the backboard. And basketball players don't have to look for spots. They know where they are. That's automatic. You coming down the court, you know where you are. You know where you want to take the shot. And you're just waiting for that ball to get to you. And so that's what I did. I put many hours of training shooting off that backboard in high school. And when I got to North Carolina College and I got to the pros, hey, that was ingrained. That was automatic. Didn't have to think about it much.
Wow, wow. Why is it, the coach, that you do you see that you don't see players today using that backboard, especially with the three-point arc?
Well, coach, it's because of the coaches. Coaches have got it. The coaches have got to teach it. I will tell you something that you did not know.
Okay.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar did not have a sky hook until he got to college. He learned to shoot the sky hook in college.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason he learned to shoot the sky hook in college, he could not dunk.
That's right.
In college. When he went to college, they threw the rule out that there will be no dunking. And I think they threw it out because of him. So he taught himself how to shoot the sky hook, and nobody else can shoot it. And you don't see any of the centers today shooting real hook shots.
Wow.
You see
most
of the centers shooting 15-footers.
That's
my
right.
My gosh.
That's right.
You know, I'm looking at these guys playing basketball, and I'm looking at Embiid, and I'm looking at the kid out in Milwaukee. I'm looking at him shooting 15-foot jumpers. When they were down low, they would be picking up a lot of fouls, getting to the free throw line, and closer to the basket, shooting better.
Yeah. Yeah, wow.
They don't do it.
No, they don't do it. Let's talk about Bill Russell. And you and I had a conversation recently, and I said, you know, I call you Coach Jones because I remember you coaching at the UDC. And I said, Coach, a lot of these younger pundits in basketball, they don't know how good Russell was. And when they talk about the greatest players of all time or even the greatest centers, they don't even have, in some cases, Russell's name in the mix. Tell us, you saw firsthand as a teammate for years how great Bill Russell was. Talk to us about Russ.
You're the greatest of all times. I love what you and GOAT, GOAT.
GOAT.
Yeah, GOAT, greatest of all time. So when they talk about all these players, and they say, who are the greatest player of all time? The first thing that comes out of my mouth is Bill Russell. It's not about how many points you scored. It's about winning championships. And he averaged 16 points a ball game. He averaged over 20 rebounds a ball game.
Mm.
And he hated to lose. That's the one thing I love about him. And he loved it. I think Will Chamberlain made him a better basketball player because he loved the challenge going up against a bigger, stronger player. And not only that, he was a leader. Yes, he did, because we felt that with Russell on the floor, most teams could not beat us because of his defensive, the defensive way he played. So I could challenge Oscar Robinson, who I think is one of the greatest guards in the league. I could challenge Jerry West. I could challenge Hal Greer. I didn't worry about Walt Frazier. He wasn't a scorer. He was a defensive player, so didn't have to worry about him. But it was a challenge to play against Oscar Robinson. My gosh, he got a triple-double for 1 year, the whole thing. He gave me nightmares, and there was no question about it. You know, Jerry West came to play every game, and so you had to be up. But as long as I had Russell behind my back, I did not even worry about these guys going to the hoop so I could play a different defensive game. And even today, now I'll tell you this, you people, y'all talk about could certain people play in the game today. I'll put it like this, Coach. If we had to travel like they do, they got first class, they got their own plane. We had to travel with passengers. We had no nutritionists to give us the right kinds of food. We had no weight rooms and personal trainers to keep our bodies in shape. And guess what? We didn't miss a game. We didn't ask to rest. And we played 82 games. For 10 years, I played 82 games a year. We didn't ask for rest to take a day off because people were coming to see the Russells. People was coming to see the Robinson, the Jerry West, the Elgin Baylors, who's from Washington, D.C. also, Dave B. That's who they were coming to see play.
Yes.
And none of us asked for a day off. And think about these kids today. They got everything to go for them. So if you put us on the same level, if we could have had the same thing they had today, many of us could play in the game that they're playing today. I felt this. Red Outback refused to let us lift weights. Refused. If I could have built up my quads, I could have jumped as high as Michael Jordan. I could dunk anyway, but I'm just telling you the truth. I couldn't use weights to build up my quads. He says, use weights, he's going to find you.
Coach, I would always flip it, and I would say, could some of the players today play in the era of yesteryear? And also, Coach, everything that you said was right true on the money, but let me add one more. How the game was called. If you drove the middle against some of the big guys like Chamberlain and Embry and people like that, you were going to get hit.
Well, I think too many of these players are protected, especially your great players. There's no question about it. But in my day, you knew you were going to get hit, and you're going to be challenged not to come back in there again. And, I mean, they hit you hard enough that you had respect for them. Nate Thurman was one of the guys I feared mostly. Not that he's going to hurt you, but you are not going to get to that basket. He had those long arms. He was a 7-footer, very strong. You had to give those guys a lot of respect. I speak to Embry about once a month, and as big as he was, I love. Oh, by the way, I played with him 1 year with the Boston Celtics. And let me tell you, I love to run off him. Coming around those picks off him, I knew I was going to be free. Oh, yes. It was great, Coach. Everybody contributed to our team being successful. Everybody. And I know it all from the day I first got there. I didn't know a person on the team. I didn't know anybody. I'd heard of them. But I didn't know about it. Coach, I never saw an NBA game until I played in it.
Wow.
Never saw one except on TV.
Wow.
So yes, I was mesmerized, if you if that's the right word to use. Being around those guys.
And Coach, speak of that, because you, again, I have the advantage of having conversations numerous times with Sam Jones off air, and I always remember some of the great stories you told. You told me one time that when you first came in the league, Bob Cousy passed you the ball, you passed it to someone else, and he pulled you to the side and told you what?
He told me don't ever pass the ball anymore. He says, if Bob Cousy passes me the ball, I got to shoot it. He this is Coach. He changed my whole game. I'm a team basketball player. You find an open man, you give it to him, even though because his shot may be a little bit lesser than yours in terms of distance. Coach pulled me aside. He says, did Cousy pass you the ball? And I said, yes. He said, did you shoot it? I said, no, I saw open man. Knowing Coach Auerbach, he said, listen, I'm going to ask you this question again, because he used some expletive words. So he said, did Cousy pass you the ball? I said, yes. He said, when Cousy passes you the ball, you've got to shoot it. That's why you're on the bench. You didn't shoot the ball. So
wow.
I went and told Bill Russell. I told Bill Russell when I went back in the game, I said, Bill, if you are open in the basket, you're free. You might as well look for the rebound, because I'm not passing. I'm going to shoot. I wanted to let him know that don't neighbor at me because you're under there free and I didn't pass it to you. I just want to let you
Coach,
know I'm shooting.
And, Coach, having said that, another story that I'm sharing with our listeners, you told me, you shared with me, there was one game that you went in and you had a number in your mind and saying, I'm going to shoot, for example, 30 shots this game or 20 shots this half. Tell us that story.
You don't forget anything. Well, Tommy Heisen had shot 37 times in a ball game. And I said, shoot, I want that record, most shots for the Celtics. And we were playing out on the West Coast, and I knew I could shoot 30-some times. So we at the halftime, I had 24 shots up. So I said, oh, now all I got to do is shoot 14, and I'll have that record. And when the game ended, we lost by 8 points. And Russell was coaching, and he's got a sheet. And he says, I know why we lost. And somebody said, why? He says, well, Sam Jones and Hamilcheck. And then that's what I kind of perked up. I wonder why he called him Hamilcheck's name. Because I knew I had taken most of the shots. Well, Coach, we had shot 105 times. Hamilcheck had taken 42.
Hold up, Coach. 105 times, you and Hamilcheck?
Oh, yeah. No. The whole team has shot 105 times.
Oh, the whole team, 105 times.
Yeah. And Hamilcheck and I had taken 75 of those shots.
TV Christmas.
Wait a minute. This is what's funny. Hamilcheck had taken 42 shots. I couldn't believe that. And I had taken 33 shots. 33 shots. So now, and we lost by 8 points. And Russell just called Hamilcheck and Jones is responsible for losing this game. And then he says, does anyone have anything to say? And I raised my hand, and I said, yes, I do. He said, well, what do you want to say? I said, well, first of all, this is a team game. And I said, Hamilcheck and I took 75 shots. Now, we made a lot of points, but we missed a lot of basketball. Our average was terrible. I said, listen, if we took 75 shots, there were 30 shots left. And I said, there 12 guys on this team, so we gave you guys 3 shots apiece. That's 3 times 10 is 30. All you had to do of those 30 shots to make 5 of them, and we'd have won by 2 points. So Russell said, "All right, let's go home. Let's go home." Russell.
Oh boy, this is some good stuff. Sam Jones is in the coach's corner with Coach Butch McAdams, and Sam, you had mentioned a guy that is just on the Mount Rushmore here in the D.C. area, Rabbit Elgin Baylor. Again, doesn't get enough credit in terms of being one of the innovators, one of the pioneers in gliding and hanging in the air. Talk about the greatness of Elgin Baylor.
I hate to talk about him because he, I remember the one thing I have here someplace is we got eight hands circling Elgin Baylor, eight hands on the defense. And then there's that black hand, two hand going up between four guys when he had his 63 or 64 points in Boston Garden.
Yeah.
And we had so many guys on him. And then he had that little head movement.
Right.
It was like a nervous movement that you didn't know why he was doing that. We didn't know at
that's
the time.
Right. That's
and
right.
He came in the league. He came from, he's actually from Washington, D.C. He came in the league and drafted by the Lakers that was playing in Minnesota. And this guy was a phenomenon. He couldn't have been any more than 6'6". Everybody talked about 6'7", 6'8". That was about 6'6", but could jump and had good hands and had a great jump shot. And I called him Dr. J is the guy who came after Elgin Baylor. Dr. J had a little bit more height. But Elgin could have been the marquee of the league at that particular time. He was just that good. He was one of the best forwards. Back then, we didn't call him a small forward or big forward. He was one of the forwards. He'd have been a small forward now to play the game. And probably could have played the two position. Plus, he could pass. And if he had to go big and a big guard, he probably could have played the two guard. He was that good. And we didn't like to play against him. That's one thing for sure. He was a nightmare like Oscar Robertson was a nightmare. That's how good he was. And he's never got his due either.
Mm-hmm. Coach Sam Jones is in the coach's corner. And, Coach, we have to, before we conclude this wonderful interview, I appreciate you giving us some time, but we got to talk about your transition from being a Hall of Fame player to a coach. Was that easy? Was it difficult? Most of your coaches weren't Hall of Fame players, and some of the great players had difficulty coaching because they couldn't understand why players couldn't do some of the things that they could do, which was easy for them. Talk about your transition from player to coach.
Well, first of all, I went to Federal City College, which was a new college in Washington, D.C.
That's right.
And it was a college without dormitories. And I knew if I got veterans who were married and they were good, I had to take those veterans. And I knew that sometimes they may not be able to come to practice because of what is happening at home. And one of your sponsors, Red Horton,
was one
of my first players. And,
and
Red is just like a son. And Red is just like a son to me.
Awesome.
And he was a good guard. And I enjoyed having him and Hersey, all those kids to come out and play. And I knew that it was going to be different because I couldn't go to a dormitory and where all of them would be. They were all over Washington, D.C. And I just made so many friends that those young men still call me today.
Yes.
Because I respected what they had to put up with. We didn't have a gym. We had to play a lot of our games in the high schools.
Yes, you did.
But we had a great schedule. We won some tournaments, and I wanted to tell them about the facts of life. And that I wanted them to get the education. You may not be a basketball player, but if you get an education, you're going to have a job. And so that was the experience that many coaches would never have to go through because of the fact you can't keep tabs on your players every game because being somebody had a couple of kids in the military who was married. And you have to give them leeway, and you have to tell your other people why you're doing this. But it was interesting because I had them from all over Washington, D.C. And they told me about Washington, D.C. when I got there, and I lived there for 35 years.
Yes.
And it was still I would still be there, but they're in the winters. And that's why
yeah.
I left. You live for 35 years, you got to like the place.
No question. And
yes,
we loved you. And, you know, we adopted you as our own, and you were certainly well known. One of my final thoughts would be, and again, just sharing my time spent with you. We did a clinic together outside on a basketball court, and you did something that was so amazing to me. You were talking about shooting. You started under the basket, except you were lying on the court. In other words, you had your backside on the ground, under the basket, and shooting with your wrist. And you made the first shot, great wrist action. Then you moved back, made the second. And finally, folks, this is a true story, Sam Jones had his backside seated on the foul line, and he hit nothing but net, and that was all wrist and follow through. You remember that, Coach?
Coach, I taught that for a reason. And the reason I saw right near the basket is to give the ball a backspin. And I want to teach these young kids that the release at the end of the fingertips, the ball would be going actually backwards going up to the basket. And that was the rotation of the ball. When you shoot a basketball and you watch these kids shoot, even today, what you watch is Stephen Curry shoot. There's a rotation on that ball that's going backwards. And so the only way you can get that ball and you're close under the basket is you've got to spin that ball and release it from your fingertips and your wrists. And then as you back up, I was teaching them to see the ball going to the basket and look at that rotation. And so you are so right. So I can shoot that shot from the free throw line. And I have a lot of confidence in it. And it was a way of teaching young boys and young girls how to hold the ball, how to get that elbow up like an L almost, and then go up and release the ball on your fingertips.
Wow, wow. Coach, before you leave, we have a little segment where we have all our guests give parting shots. We call it WOW, Words of Wisdom. And who better our listenership with words of wisdom than the second greatest winner in basketball all time. Coach, I remember we did a camp together, and we had a young kid at the camp, and he said, "Are you better than Michael Jordan?" And you asked the kid, you said, "How many rings does Michael Jordan have?" And he said, "Six." And you just pointed all of your fingers and said, "This how many rings I have." But being one of the great winners, leave us with some words of wisdom, because you just don't win that many championships in athletic and not have it carry over in the real game, the game of life.
Well, truthfully, it's respect for the players that you're playing with and the respect for the other players who you're playing against.
because they would not be there if they could not play. And it's all about team basketball. It's all about a team. The same thing in life. If you're working with a group of people, you want to be a part of them. You may not be the star. You don't have to be a follower, but you can be there together. And I always tell people, when you criticize a person, make it in a positive way rather than a negative way. It's such as, I know that you can play defense better than you're playing tonight. You're better than that. That's a positive way. Then a person can react to that. And it's about understanding, as a coach, the players only got to know one personality. That's the coach. But a coach got to know 12 different personalities. And he's got to know how to treat each one of those personalities to make them respond to what you want to do. Some people you have to talk very softly to. That's even in life with your family. You know, some people you have to sort of get a little boisterous. You got to talk more like a military man.
Sure.
This is what you, but never criticizing in a deceptive way or something that, you know, it's like, you can't do this. No, no, no. You can do this, but you got to try. If you try and fail, I don't care. But if you don't try, you can't fail anyway.
That's right. Absolutely.
And so I think, I think many of the basketball players, you're a star in high school. And you get ready to go to college, you still can be a star, but you may not start. Because the coach already got experienced players there. But you are going to get your chance. So get your grades, stay in shape, and when you call upon, you better be ready.
Wow.
That's the name of the game.
And Coach, playing today's game at the NBA level, are there one or two players that you especially like? And also, is there a player or two that you see and say, that guy reminds me a little bit of me when I played?
No, Coach, those guys are better than me.
Oh, no. Listen, Coach, I'm not buying that.
Those guys, hey, listen, man, Stephen Curry is going to make a four-point play. I'm telling you, there's going to be another line that behind the half-court line. There's going to be another foot behind the half-court line with a three-point play in, because I believe Stephen Curry can close his eyes almost. He knows where that basket is from every place on the court. And that that's in his head, that he can shoot from any place on the court. Now, they won't be able to make it on the sidelines, but out front, they can have a four-point play. You got players today. That are just you think about it, my players gone. Tim Duncan was the guy I really liked, as far as the backboard was concerned. Even though he played center, he had a great kiss off the glass that I really loved to watch him shoot. Sometimes Scottie Pippen would do the same thing with the Chicago Bulls. Not too many people use the board. You talk about all of these great players, but great players to me got to be leaders. Michael Jordan was a leader. LeBron James is a leader. And Kobe Bryant, they had the right name for him, the Black Mamba. Mm-hmm. Man, this guy could strike from any place. And so you have to watch them. And man, why would LeBron James be a point guard at 6'8" jumping like he would? Why isn't he small forward, big forward, wherever you want to play? There's a kid need to go to the free throw line 15 times a ball game, which you can do, or more. So I watch those players, and I see how they react. And I just love to watch certain teams. San Antonio, I used to love to watch. Everybody's going to watch Golden State because they just had a powerhouse from all over. And so that's why I enjoy them so much.
Well, speaking of enjoying so much, I have enjoyed this one-on-one. You know, Coach, thank you so much. This has meant the world to me. And I know that when we put this interview on the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com and on my own personal Facebook page, we're going to get so many hits and I'll receive so many calls because you are not just well-respected in the nation, but as I said, we consider you a native Washingtonian. You know, we adopted you. So, man, thank you, thank you, thank you so much. And I'll tell our mutual friend, your adopted son and my brother, Randolph Horton, a.k.a. Reds Bowman, I'll make sure
yeah,
that he
right.
gets a copy. Yep, yep, he will get
Please
a copy
Please do.
Of
I appreciate that, Coach.
Thank you so
Please,
much.
I appreciate it.
All right, folks, and that
All
was
All right, y'all have a great
You too. And, folks, that was the legendary Sam Jones in the Coach's Corner. And, once again, I want to thank our sponsors, Horton's Funeral Service. For 80 years, they've been the very best in family funeral care. They're conveniently located at 600 Kennedy Street Northwest. You can give them a call at 202-829-9000. Again, 202-829-9000. And as for the aforementioned Randolph Horton, a.k.a. Reds Bowman. Also, if you are in need of any dental work, don't hesitate to reach out to Dr. Edward T. Buford III. Edward T. Buford III, 202-667-8818. They're located 1209 U Street Northwest. And when the pandemic ends and you're looking for a place to work out, it is the Athletic Republic Capital Region. That's the old run and shoot, located 3417 Marlboro Pike. That's in the heart of District Heights, Maryland. So I want to thank the sponsors, and we will see you next time on In and Out of Sports in the Coach's Corner with Coach Butch McAdams, powered by the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. We'll see you next time.